Welcome back to A Year of War and Peace, the podcast where we go from War and Peace Zero to War and Peace Hero in 1 year flat. Can you believe I nearly said that wrong on the 190th time that I've said it? I nearly messed it up. We're up to book 9, chapter 23, which is the last chapter of book 9. And it goes a little bit like this. At that moment, Count Rostopchin, with his protruding chin and alert eyes, wearing the uniform of a general with sash over his shoulder, entered the room, stepping briskly to the front of the crowd of gentry. "Our sovereign, the Emperor, will be here in a moment," said Rostopchin. "I am straight from the palace. Seeing the position we are in, I think there is little need for discussion. The Emperor has deigned to summon us and the merchants. Millions will pour forth from there." He pointed to the merchants' hall. "But our business is to supply men and not spare ourselves. That is the least we can do." A conference took place, confined to the magnates sitting at the table. The whole consultation passed more than quietly. After all the preceding noise, the sound of their old voices saying one after another, "I agree," or for variety, "I too am of that opinion," and so on, had even a mournful effect. The secretary was told to write down the resolution of the Moscow nobility and gentry, and they would furnish 10 men fully equipped out of every 1,000 serfs, as the Smolensk gentry had done. Their chairs made a scraping noise as the gentleman who conferred rose with apparent relief and began walking up and down arm in arm to stretch their legs and converse in couples. "The Emperor! The Emperor!" A sudden cry resounded through the halls, and the whole throng hurried to the entrance. The Emperor entered the hall through a broad path between two lines of nobles. Every face expressed respectful, awestruck curiosity. Pierre stood rather far off and could not hear all that the Emperor said. From what he did hear, he understood that the Emperor spoke of the danger threatening the Empire and of the hopes he placed on the Moscow nobility. He was answered by a voice which informed him of the resolution just arrived at. "Gentlemen," said the Emperor, with a quivering voice. There was a rustling among the crowd, and it again subsided so that Pierre distinctly heard the pleasantly human voice of the Emperor saying, with emotion, "I never doubted the devotion of the Russian nobles, but today it has surpassed my expectations. I thank you in the name of the fatherland. Gentlemen, let us act. Time is most precious." The Emperor ceased speaking. The crowd began pressing around him, and rapturous exclamations were heard from all sides. "Yes, most precious. A royal word," said Count Rostov with a sob. He stood at the back, and though he had heard hardly anything, understood everything in his own way. From the hall of the nobility, the Emperor went to that of the merchants. There he remained about 10 minutes. Pierre was among those who saw him come out from the merchants' hall with tears of emotion in his eyes. As became known later, he had scarcely begun to address the merchants before tears gushed from his eyes, and he concluded in a trembling voice, "When Pierre saw the Emperor, he was coming out accompanied by two merchants, one of whom Pierre knew, a fat Otkupshik, which apparently the footnote tells me is a dealer in spirits, one who leased from the government the monopoly of the sale of spirits for a certain district. The other was the mayor, a man with a thin, sallow face and narrow beard. Both were weeping. Tears filled the thin man's eyes, and the fat Otkupchik sobbed outright like a child and kept repeating, 'Our lives and property, take them, Your Majesty.' Pierre's one feeling at the moment was a desire to show that he was ready to go to all lengths and was prepared to sacrifice everything. He now felt ashamed of his speech with its constitutional tendency and sought an opportunity of effacing it. Having heard that Count Momonov was furnishing a regiment, Bezukhov at once informed Rostopchin that he would give 1,000 men and their maintenance. Old Rostov could not tell his wife of what had passed without tears, and at once consented to Petya's request and went himself to enter his name. Next day the emperor left Moscow. The assembled nobles all took off their uniforms and settled down again in their homes and clubs, and not without some groans gave orders to their stewards about the enrollment, feeling amazed themselves at what they had done. Alright, there we go, another chapter down, another book down, and as we do, I am going to go back and read the chapter spoilers for this book that we've just read, book 9. We'll go back to chapter 1 of book 9 and go all the way through to the chapter we just read. Chapter 1, the year 1812, rulers and generals are history's slaves. Then Napoleon crosses the Niemen and sees Polish Uhlans drowned swimming the Vilnia. We had Alexander I at Vilna, the ball at Count Bensingsen's. Boris overhears the emperor speaking to Balashev and learns that the French have crossed the frontier, and Alexander's letter to Napoleon. Balashev's mission to Napoleon, and he meets Murat, the king of Naples. Balashev is taken to Davout, who treats him badly, but he is at least presented to Napoleon in Vilna. Balashev is then interviewed with Napoleon, Balashev dines with Napoleon, and we have Prince Andrew on Kutuzov's staff in Moldavia. He is sent to Barclay's army, he visits Bald Hills, he talks with his father and Princess Mary. Prince Andrew in the army at Drissa, 8 conflicting parties. That was a hell of a chapter. He is introduced to Fuel, an informal council of war, Fuel's dogmatism. Nicholas writes to Sonia, and then he and Ilyin are in a storm. Mary Hendrikovna, the officers and the doctor. That was when the officers were flirting with the doctor's wife. I think that's who Mary Hendrikovna is. Courage, Rostov goes into action at Ostrovnovna. His hussars charge the French dragoons and he wounds and captures a prisoner. Then Natasha's illness and the use of the doctors. Natasha and Pierre, she prepares for communion with Belova, and there's a church service and then her health improves. At chapter 18, we've got Natasha attends mass and hears the special prayer for victory. 19, Pierre's relation to life altered by his feeling for Natasha, then the whole 666 saga with Napoleon as Antichrist. Pierre's belief that he is destined to end Napoleon's power, and he gets news for the Rostovs. Then we've got Pierre at the Rostovs. Natasha again takes up her singing. Sonia reads Alexander's manifesto. Petya declares that he will enter the army. Natasha realizes that Pierre loves her, and then he decides to cease going to the Rostovs. Petya goes to the Kremlin to see the emperor. He gets crushed. He secures a biscuit thrown by the emperor after dinner. In the penultimate chapter, we had assembly of the nobility and merchants at the Sloboda Palace and a limited discussion, which Pierre is part of. And then this chapter, Count Rostopchin's remarks, the offer made by the Moscow nobility and gentry, the emperor's speech, and Pierre offers to supply and maintain 1,000 men. Okay, so let's have a closer focus on this chapter. Turtle Vader said, in the face of meeting the sovereign, everyone seems to agree on what must be done. Do you think this agreement will be upheld by everyone? Wiggity Wag said, it seems like this societal pressure would be there to follow through on this, but who knows how they would track it. Not all the nobility seems trustworthy. There's a lot of big talk. Yeah. That's true, but I kind of had the impression that they were getting swept up in that same madness that Nikolai and Petya in the previous chapter, where they would basically lay down their own lives in service to Alexander. Or like how those guys crossing the river just drowned themselves just to impress Napoleon. I think they were making these big pledges in the same vein. Turtle Vader went on to ask, "When the Sovereign comes into the hall, the crowd rushes to the door to be closer to him, yet Pierre was standing rather far away. Why do you think Pierre is not as enthralled by the Emperor's presence?" Wiggity-Wack said, "I would love to hear anyone else's insight on the Pierre and the Emperor situation. He is a character who doesn't seem so caught up in the celebrity love for Alexander. As we've gotten to know him, he has been so easily swayed by others, but he doesn't seem to fall victim to the Emperor the same way Nicholas and others do. He still goes along with what all the others are doing in the end, but it seems more like peer pressure, not love of the Emperor. Why is that?" I've noticed that as well. And I don't know why that is, but it is interesting to watch. Pierre's a funny character. He's sort of very malleable. He's very easily impressed upon. But at the same time, he's not, he doesn't get caught up in all this, like, celebrity worship of emperors. Although, actually, now that I say that, I'm remembering back to right in the very start of this book. Might have even been in the first chapter. Or it was in the first few chapters when he was at Anna Mikhailovna's party. And he was enraptured about Napoleon at the time. I think he was talking about how much he loves Napoleon. So that was interesting. Maybe he's changed. As of that 666 chapter, he is convinced that he is the one who's going to bring Napoleon down from power. So maybe he's not starstruck by Alexander because he thinks he's on the same level. Something like that, maybe. Turtle Vader also said, "The merchants and the Moscow nobility seem united in the feeling of take my life and my property, your majesty. But at the end of the chapter, seemingly grumble about the fulfillment of the order. Are they all just totally two-faced?" Yeah. I think it was more like they were happy to do it in the moment. They were swept up because it was like a pride thing. And then they were grumbling later on because they then kind of like almost like buyer's remorse or something, you know. Like imagine you're getting swept up in an auction and you're like, yes, 1,000, 2,000, 3,000. And then once it's all said and done, you're like walking away going, oh man, what did I just do? And actually that last line in the chapter, "All the assembled noblemen took off their uniforms, planted themselves at home or in the clubs again, groaning, gave their stewards orders about the militia, astonished at what they had done." I think that very last bit, astonished at what they had done, is the telling part. They were happy to do it in the moment, but afterwards they were like, oh dear. I suppose it's like a charity auction. Think of it like a charity auction. In the moment, you want to seem like you're willing to give it all up for a good cause, but then later you're like, oh God, how much did I pay for that? All right, that's going to do us for this episode. Thanks very much for listening. I'll see you tomorrow.